You're listening to a University of Minnesota Bookstore author event podcast, recorded live from our location in Kauffman Memorial Union on the U of M's Twin Cities campus. For more information on upcoming author events, please visit our website at bookstore.umn.edu.
Our guest today is author Robert Helenga. He grew up in Three Oaks, Michigan, and spent his summers in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. He's taught literature, English literature, at Knox College in Galesburg, Illinois, since 1968. It was during his tenure at Knox that he directed two programs for the Associated Colleges of the Midwest, one at the Newberry Library in Chicago and one in Florence, Italy. And he has spent a year at the University of Chicago on a National Endowment for the Humanities Fellowship. Also, he started writing his fiction while he was at Knox. They had a strong creative writing program there. And he published his first story in 1973 and his first novel, after 39 rejections, in 1994. Snake Woman of Little Egypt is his newest and sixth novel. His first are The 16 Pleasures, The Fall of a Sparrow, Blues Lessons, Philosophy Made Simple, and The Italian Lover. He has a wife, Virginia, and three daughters, and we're very pleased to have him with us today. Please welcome Robert Helenga.
Okay, I'm just going to say a little bit before I read this passage. There are two point of view characters. One is an anthropologist. It's his 40th birthday. He's trying to decide what to do with the rest of his life. He could either go back to Africa where he did his field work, lived with the pygmies, tasted something that he thought maybe he couldn't live without, and left behind a daughter whom he'd never seen because he got kicked out of the country. I won't even go into that. The other point of view character is Sonny. Sonny's husband was the pastor of a snake handling church and forced her to stick her arm in a box of rattlesnakes. Forced her at gunpoint. And she said, "Why don't you just shoot me?" She was testing her faith to see if God would allow her to live, depending on if she'd been faithful or not. And she says, "Why don't you just shoot me?" And she'd rather get shot than serpent bit. But he says, "Well, if you don't put your arm in, I'll force your head down in the box, and you can take the bite in your eye." So she puts her arm in the box, and nothing happens, and her husband raps on the glass of the aquarium with the butt of his pistol. Finally, a snake bites her thumb. It's not too bad, though. They go back in the house. They're in the kitchen. He puts his gun down on the table, opens the refrigerator door to get a glass of milk, bumps the door shut with his butt, and she shoots him, which I thought was certainly deserved. She doesn't kill him. But she's the one who goes to jail because at the trial, he testifies that she got a snake out of the snake shed, had 70 snakes in this shed, and was trying to get it to bite him while he was taking a nap, but it bit her instead. And at the beginning of the story, she's in prison, just about to get out. And when she does get out, her uncle has left her some enough money to enroll in Thomas Ford University. And she rents her uncle's own apartment over a garage owned by an anthropologist. And these are the two point of view characters. And the shape of the novel is they move in somewhat different directions. It's not a dysfunctional relationship story. They are ideally suited to each other. But she doesn't want anything to do with snake handling religion or any kind of religion anymore. She has studied biology in prison. She becomes a biology major, and she moves toward a scientific worldview. He, on the other hand, is an anthropologist, is very interested in the church that she came from, the Church of the Burning Bush with signs following. The signs being, you shall handle poisonous serpents and they won't harm you. You should drink poisonous things and it won't harm you. Heal the sick, raise the dead. And then there's another one that I never can remember. So this is the background. He gets involved with her former church, which is in Little Egypt. Do you know where Little Egypt is? No. Little Egypt is another name for Southern Illinois. And culturally, it's part of Appalachia. The people there all have relatives over in Kentucky and East Tennessee and West Virginia. He's involved in the church down there. She's becoming a scientist, and she gets. But there's a lot of snake stuff throughout because she gets tapped by her biology professor to help gather these rattlesnakes from a relict population of rattlesnakes that has been discovered. It's very unusual in central Illinois. You don't have rattlesnakes because the hogs killed them all. Well, I mean, the hogs killed a lot of them. The hogs just stomped on them and ate them. So this is an important discovery, and the farmer who discovered it on his property is going to dynamite them, which is what they did. Another reason there aren't any rattlesnakes around. But he calls the biology department, and they're going to harvest them. So he has heard stories about Sonny, one of his students, and it's hard to find people who aren't afraid of rattlesnakes, and she's one of them. So they go out on this, they gather 30 rattlesnakes. And it's a big day for her because she clearly knows more about how to do this than anyone else. And so she is kind of the star of the show, and she is really feeling good. And there's also a little flirtation with the biology professor, Kramer. I'm going to read the last paragraph of the snake hunt. Then there's a snake, space break, and she goes back home to Jackson, the anthropologist. There was a tiny bit of whiskey left in the flask, and standing by the Thomas Ford truck, Kramer and I finished it. It was a good feeling, warm and dangerous. I wasn't surprised when Kramer put an arm around me. I thought he was going to bend over and kiss me, and he did. I almost exploded. He smelled of snake, musky and meaty. I knew I'd crossed a line, but it was a line I'd crossed before. And I was a little bit sad rather than worried. I thought I could draw another line around this kiss and keep it separate from the rest of my life. Space break. That night, Jackson and I drank beer while I cooked two small steaks on the French stove, steak au poivre. And then we drank a little red wine with the steaks. I drank just enough to maintain my high. After we finished the dishes, I went upstairs and put on my French outfit. I wanted to discover whose version of myself I was going to be. I hadn't washed it, and it was wrinkled and still had the red wine stains down the front. I doubted if they'd ever come out. My small breasts looked nice and firm in the spaghetti strap camisole. I admired myself in the mirror over Jackson's big chestnut dresser. I don't think I've ever been so aroused. The dress was like the magic girdle I read about in Western Civ. Not a girdle, but some kind of belt that you fastened under your breasts. More like a bra than a belt. Hera, the queen of the gods, borrows it from Aphrodite, the goddess of love, when she wants to seduce her husband. All you have to do is put it on, and you are irresistible. That's the way I felt, irresistible to myself, too, even though I hadn't taken a shower. And when I put my hands up to my nose, I could smell snake and gasoline and whiskey and maybe Kramer, too. My body was trembling, just the way it had when I'd confronted the big snake. My mind was spinning, my heart pounding, my feet and hands tingling, my stomach churning. Jackson, I called, come up here, I want to show you something. He took his time, made me wait. Then on the stairs, I felt each step like a smart, sassy slap on the ass. At the top of the stairs, we confronted each other in a rush of fear and of pleasure. I could hear my own bones singing like a rattlesnake's rattle. I could feel my stomach coiling, and below my stomach, something ready to strike. I wondered what happened to that outfit, Jackson said, looking me up and down, but I was afraid to ask. You look 10 times better than you did when I got here, I said. He had Lyme disease when she arrived. You look like you're full of life. I could already feel his hands on me. I unfastened the cash cur and the little putty-colored skirt, and then pulled the cami over my head like a snake shedding its skin. I could feel my blood thickening. I was turning into DX's two-headed snake, into a powerful erection that would pulse under this man's touch. I was Snake Woman. I was the python in the sand cave in the Tsodilo Hills. And when we embraced, we turned into the ancient Mesopotamian tree of life. His kisses were like blood and salt. But afterwards, when he turned to me and asked, "What just happened?" I didn't say anything about the snakes. What just happened? I had to think. My heart started beating faster, I said, and my breathing got faster too, and I tightened all my muscles, and my nipples got hard, and my clit swelled up, and my pelvic area got engorged with blood, and I had about 15 muscle contractions, and then my body got rigid, and then it relaxed. Why? What do you think happened? "You took me inside you," he said, "and devoured my seed when I was most vulnerable and you were most triumphant. I explored your dark continent at my own risk. You lured me on. But because I survived the encounter, you will now share your great riches and power with me because you love me." It wasn't really funny, but I started to laugh. "Is that what really happened?" "That's what really happened," he said. I thought maybe he was right. Okay, that's all I'm going to read.
That was great.
Oh, thanks.